The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Brian E. Lau, creator of Staunch Ambition, and you are listening to the PBD Cast by John Orwater. Or wait, Orlando? Yes, John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 278. I hope you're doing well out there, and thank you very much for checking out this episode. And before I talk about my guest real quick, I want to let you know about a couple of things you need to keep an eye out for, a couple of projects that I was a part of that I'd like to brag about, if I may. First, Gerald Glassford, the man behind the Pop Culture Cosmos, he invited me to come back on and talk about some wrestling. And in fact, last week I did so. The topic was the top five WWE superstars that, quite frankly, Vince McMahon and the rest of the Brain Trust hasn't used effectively. And it's a fun conversation. Gerald and I bantered back and forth as to what wrestlers, what superstars we think maybe haven't been used the best and how they could be used even better, or maybe, you know, maybe they should go on to another company or whatnot. And it was a blast. I always enjoy being on the Pop Culture Cosmos. Gerald, thank you very much for having me on, and I can't wait to come back on real soon in a few weeks and talk about WrestleMania. So if you're curious to listen to that particular episode with me, it's not dropped just yet. It's coming in a few days. Just keep an eye out on my social media, as I'll be hyping it up, of course, on Twitter at PVDMVP, which is my personal handle, and of course on Instagram and Facebook at PVDcast. And hey, man, if you're interested in Gerald's podcast, just head on over to popculturecosmos.podbean.com. That's probably the easiest place to catch all of his great episodes. Once again, that's popculturecosmos.podbean.com. Also, I got the opportunity last week to be part of a huge Remake Revolution March Madness tournament. Now, many of you probably saw some crazy videos I had posted on Twitter and on Facebook regarding this. So, for those of you that are maybe not familiar with what Remake Revolution is, well, it's the brainchild of Mike McGee from Mike McGee TV and the Three Geeks podcast. It's a little game that we like to play every once in a while where teams of two remake a usually bad movie based on a pitch of the plot, the cast, writer, director, and the marketing plan. And it's been great fun. We've done several rounds of it, but this time the competition has expanded out to a giant tournament involving past winners, current champions, new teams. It's been a lot of fun. And so Brian Lau and myself, Team Staunchcast, are competing. I'm not going to say if we won or lost yet because I want you to check out the episodes. And they're available over on 3geeks.ninja. They're going to be dropping next week, the first round that is. And I just say this, it was a fun. We had a blast. Our opponents are a couple of guys that represent a media group out of Colorado called Some Nobodies, Zach and Dylan. It was great to compete against them. And I'm not going to reveal who won, who lost them. I'm just going to say, check it out next week when the episodes start dropping. And once again, you can find out all the information about Remake Revolution, the March Madness Jamboree Podcastathon, or I don't know. Max from Three Geeks gave it a really long name. It is a really cool long name, but I can never remember it. I don't know why. But nonetheless, 3geeks.ninja is the website. That's where you can get all the info. So, All right, now on to my very special guest for episode 278 of the PVD cast. He is a gentleman that has been in quite a few independent movies throughout his career. He's a man that worked with John Waters in Maryland when John Waters was just getting started. He appeared in many of his early films. He also had a bit role on Homicide: Life on the Street, which is a favorite TV show of mine. And he's probably most known for the 1995 indie film Attack of the 60-Foot Centerfold. I am, of course, referring to Mr. George Stover, an actor from the Maryland area. I was so happy to have him come on and talk about his career and the craft of acting. And, you know, actually, I found out he shares a hobby with another podcasting colleague of mine, Model Train. So we talk a little bit about that. It's a fun conversation, and I hope you're going to enjoy it. But before we get to it, I need to let you know about a great sponsor of the PVD cast. And of course, I'm talking about the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics. They're the one-stop shop for all of your comic book needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, thousands upon thousands of back issues, comic book supplies, a great pull system. Basically, they got you covered for anything that you need. So if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. You can even give them a call. The phone number is 614-891-3000. Or if you want to check them out online because you're not in Ohio or for whatever reason, their website is wgcomics.com. And they're even on Facebook, just look for at WG Comics. And no matter how you interact with anybody, if you interact with anybody, I should say, at the store, please let them know that you heard about the store from yours truly right here on the PVD cast. All right, with that out of the way then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I sit down with my guest, George Stover. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening is an actor that has a long resume, and he is a proud resident of the fine state of Maryland, Mr. George Stover. George, how are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, I guess. I still need to get my COVID shots, though.
Oh, okay. You haven't gotten the opportunity to have that yet, huh?
Every time I check into the website for CVS or Walgreens, it says there are no appointments available. Try back later.
Oh. Well, I hope you can get in real soon, you know, because obviously it's been a very unusual year that we've been dealing with this. And
I know,
you know the way it's just wrecked our lives has been undescribable.
I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's start off real quick. So how did you get started in acting? Were you always kind of a creative kid? Were you always entertaining friends, family, whatnot? So how did that acting bug bite you?
Well, I was always a movie fan. And it wasn't until college, though, that I took some acting courses and appeared in some plays. I never did any high school plays. And I did some plays, and it was fun, but I still preferred movies. Of course, along the way, I had seen some of Herschel Gordon Lewis's films in the drive-in. And if you're familiar with them, they were shot, most of them were shot in Florida, and they were shot in 35 millimeter on film, but the production values were low. And I said, you know, I could probably act better than most of those people. And I said, geez, wouldn't it be nice if I could act in films? Now, I was too, I wasn't brave enough to move out of state. So I figured, let's see what I can do in my own backyard. So nobody made independent films in Maryland until John Waters came along, and then a little later, Don Doler. I mean, there were some films, Hollywood movies that had shot portions mm-hmm. of the film in Maryland, but there were no independent feature filmmakers in those days, because you had to use movie film, and that was more expensive. The camcorder revolution changed all that, but back in those days, you had to use movie film. Anyway, eventually I contacted John Waters and sent him a picture and a resume, and I got a part in Female Trouble. So that was my first movie, because he was the only one doing it at the time in Baltimore. And a little later, I met Don Doler and started working with him. And then I get a lot of work from people on Facebook who know me from those movies. Mm-hmm. And they just want me to be in their movie. They don't care if I can act or not. They just want me to be in it somehow. So that's always nice. Facebook has enabled me to meet a lot more filmmakers than were I not on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. I would like to just dive into John Waters, because obviously, I mean, he is a huge name in the independent cinema.
Right.
So what was he like on set and what was he like off set? Was there a difference with John Waters, or was he just the same guy from the first shot that you do till the very last shot and you're done for the day? Like, what kind of a person was he?
Well, first of all, he was very methodical, and he was actually more efficient and serious minded on set than I thought he would be. Cause you read the newspaper articles and you get the impression that these guys are just party goers smoking weed all the time. And, you know, he and his crowd. And I mean, they might've done that, but on the set, he was disciplined and organized. And I thought he had a touch of brilliance in him, but I figured the subject matter would hold him back. Of course, I was wrong, but I'm glad I was wrong. But, you know, he kind of didn't make the standard kind of independent movie. His were quite different.
Were you taken aback by that, or did you care?
Well, I kind of knew what I was getting into, because okay, I had read a lot of newspaper articles. Okay. Now, when I did Female Trouble, I had never seen Pink Flamingos or any of his other movies, but I still knew what I was getting into based on newspaper articles. And then after I shot Female Trouble, I did find Pink Flamingos, and that was a little more raunchy than Female Trouble. But at least I was at the end of Female Trouble, but I was a chaplain in jails. In the prison, so they didn't make me eat any dog poop or anything.
Did you recognize, you mentioned just that you thought he had some brilliance. Did you feel like, okay, this guy, John Waters, is going to have a lengthy career?
Well, I could tell he knew what he was doing, but, you know, the subject matter, every movie has all this gross stuff in it. And I figured, well, average America isn't going to go in for that. But of course, what happened was Hollywood caught up to him eventually. Mm-hmm. And they're probably grosser now than he was, except for the dog pooping. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they definitely, they find a trend and they jump on that trend. And, you know, maybe his type of movies for a while were hot in Hollywood. You're absolutely correct on that.
But, you know, his films caught on with a certain a niche audience, I guess you could say. And, you know, Female Trouble's like a cult classic, I guess, these days.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. A lot of his films are, you know.
Yeah.
My Baby. Yeah, a lot of them. So if we can back up a little bit, I read where you were the creator and an editor of a series of fanzines. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Was that before you got into acting, or during your first few years?
Pretty much around the same time, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I had, now my friends, Bill George and Charlie Ellis, started Black Oracle, and all of a sudden I go to the mailbox and open this little envelope and it's Black Oracle #1. And I said, wow, that is cool. And they weren't exactly selling a lot of them. So I paid off their printing bill and became the publisher of Black Oracle, for 10 issues. And then I wanted to do something a little bit more professional looking. This Black Oracle was, it did not have typesetting in it at the beginning. It was just typed stuff. You know, back in those days, you couldn't do your own typesetting like people take for granted on your home computer. Back in those days, if you wanted typesetting, you had to have it made professionally. So anyway, I wanted to do a more professional looking magazine. But instead of half size, I mean, instead of full size, I thought I'd do half size. So Cinemacabre was the new zine, and that was half size. And I got a lot of help from Don Dohler on that one. And then we just published a few issues, and I put more and more color in it, knowing that it would go bankrupt because, you know, everybody makes money off of fanzines except the publisher. I mean, the printer made money. The post office made money by my mailing them. All the intermediary people made money, like the people who did the typesetting for me, people who made the color separation negatives from a color slide I would send them. And so everybody made money except me. So that lasted for a while, but, you know, I didn't want to do that the rest of my life because I'd rather have been in a money-making proposition.
Yeah, no doubt. So Black Oracle, what was the content of that? Was it just movies,
a lot of
stuff like that?
A lot of book reviews, a lot of movie reviews, and various articles, mostly centered around science fiction and horror, either in books or movies.
Okay. Same for Cinema Cobb as well?
Well, I kind of drifted away from science fiction books and concentrated on movies more.
Okay.
That was my where I got my pleasure. I didn't read too many science fiction books when I was young. In fact, I don't think I read any of them. It's too much work reading every word on there, turning the pages. I like to just zone out, watch a movie, get hypnotized by the motion on the screen. I wasn't much of a reader.
Except for scripts, obviously.
Well, yeah, that's just a few lines here. It's not a whole bunch of exposition. Yeah, so I read a few scripts. Although sometimes I never read the whole script. I just print out the pages I'm on. Figure what I don't know won't hurt me. Of course, you know, they always say in drama class that you got to build up a character by imagining him as what kind of background he had and so forth. So sometimes I'll read the script from the beginning up to the completion of my part.
Okay.
And then I figure, well, I have the background of the character in relation to the other characters. What happens in the future, I don't know yet as an actor or as a character, because it hasn't been in the part of the script that I read yet. So whatever happens to him to the other characters in the future, I don't know yet until I see the movie. I'm basically a lazy person.
But that makes sense, though.
I mean, in a few movies I've been throughout, but a lot of movies I'm just in one part. And if I don't know what happens to everybody, you know, at that point in the script, I don't know what happens to everybody anyway. So wearing my hat as an actor, I don't know what happens to them either.
Well, I'd like to talk about a role that I'm super excited to ask you about.
Oh, my goodness.
You had a role playing Kevin Lugo on one of my favorite TV shows of all time, Homicide: Life on the Street.
Oh yeah, Homicide.
So if
you saw that.
Yeah, I saw, and as a matter of fact, I rewatched it a couple days ago because I have the entire series on DVD.
Really? Yeah, I bought that one season just to get my episode, The Wedding.
Yes. So how was it with your scene? Because it seemed like it was not a bright, sunny, warm day in Maryland when you filmed it. And I wanted to know, did you have to lay on the ground a lot?
First of all, I originally was supposed to have a line in that shot, in that scene, but it never filmed.
Okay.
So that disappointed me. It was a little damp or nippy out, so they put a big, thick blanket under me when I laid down on the ground. And, of course, it was fun to have Yaphet Kotto stand over me. Boy, he was a large man. He was standing over me looking down at my dead body on the ground, and I'm thinking, oh, I hope he doesn't fall down, because I would have gone squash. There was a scene of me walking over a bridge or something.
Yes.
That was correct. Not me. That was a stand-in wearing a similar kind of raincoat. And that voice, that narration wasn't me, or I don't know who that was. But I think you heard my voice, except it wasn't my voice.
Mm-hmm.
He was like narrating something. Now, the scene in the train station was shot. I guess train is not the exact word. What do you call metro?
Yeah, it was like a metro line. Yeah.
Yeah. That was shot on a different day. So I had 2 days working that. That was fun too, because you got to see more of my face.
How was it working with Melissa Leo and Yaphet Kotto? Did you have a lot of interaction with them, or no?
No, I was just dead by the time they got around to me. So they didn't say anything to me. They didn't even say, check and make sure if he's dead, feel his pulse. No, they didn't even do that. So I didn't actually talk to them.
Okay.
It's an unwritten, well, it's a written rule, I guess you could say, that you're not supposed to talk to one of the stars unless they talk to you first. So it would have been improper for me to go up and start a conversation with them.
Okay.
You know, like, Mr. Kotto, how did I do? Did I lay there still, real still? And did that bring any memories from Live and Let Die when you were a villain and might have bumped off some people? No, I didn't, you know, I wasn't supposed to do that. You're not supposed to strike up conversations with the principals.
Did you have any interaction with David Simon, or was he elsewhere during those scenes that you shot?
Well, it's hard to tell because I don't even know what he looks like, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I didn't at the time. Maybe I would recognize him now.
How'd you get the role?
Through a casting agency in Baltimore.
Okay.
Pat Moran casting. She cast for that series.
Okay.
I'd go to the office and read some lines, and then I got cast, and I had this one line in the side. I forget what it was, but we never shot it. So I was really disappointed in that. But at least you can see my mug.
Yeah.
Before I get killed.
And I feel like that show never got the proper due it deserved, because it's a great show. Personally, that's how I feel. I feel like more people should know about it. More people should watch it and enjoy it, because I think it's really
right. It got written up a lot in the local papers, but I don't know what the ratings were nationwide. Do you have all the episodes?
I do. I have the entire run of it.
How many were John Waters in? Two or three or something like that?
I think two. I think he's in two. Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. He might be three, but I'm pretty sure two. It's been a couple of years since I've watched the entire series, but I think he's in two for sure.
Right.
So
I was also disappointed that I didn't get my name in the end credits. At least I don't think.
No, I checked, George. Because, I watched it a couple of days ago.
If you watch an old movie, they never used to give credits to a lot of the supporting players. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if you watch Revenge of the Creature, Clint Eastwood's name is not in the credits, even though he had a speaking part. But nowadays, you know, the credits go on for, at least in a feature film, they go on for 10 minutes or something with every little name. Now, maybe they might not have time to include every little name on a TV episode, because they could be selling a commercial then. But I thought they'd give a name. I thought they'd give credit to me only because the character had a name.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like I was a complete extra.
Yeah, and Kevin Lugo was...
He had a name. He was a murder victim of the week. And so I was a little disappointed that I didn't get credit. But I got a friend of mine who's very good with the internet. He got to put the credit in my IMDb listings for me. The production company never did that.
Mm-hmm.
I think if my name had been in the end credits, somebody would have from the IMDb would have put it in there. But nobody put it in there until a friend of mine came along and I asked him if he could do it.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with George for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They're a great sponsor of the PVD Cast and your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, back issues, posters, and one world-class pull system. So if you're ever afraid that you might miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for the pull system, and every time that book comes in, they'll hold a copy for you. So check them out online at wgcomics.com, or find them on Facebook at WGComics, or if you're in the area, stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD Cast. Well, one of your other big films, and that's a little bit of a pun intended, is the attack of the 60-foot centerfolds.
Yeah, worked with the biggest star in Hollywood at the time. It was 60 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you land the role of Dr. Kramer? And how did you prepare for this role, if I could ask?
Well, that's a good question, because here I am in Baltimore, and that was shot in California. And Fred Olen Ray, the director, was an early reader of Black Oracle and Cinema Cobb. And we would have these Fanex movie conventions in Baltimore, and he would come every year and visit. So I got to be friends with him in person. So the reason I got that part was because he offered it to me.
Okay.
I didn't have to beat out 25 other people at an audition. That's all often hard to do, because you go into a room with 24 other people and they all look and sound just like you. And how does the casting agent decide who to choose? And think of all the people who are still professionals who never got chosen.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the Big Bang Theory. Sheldon Cooper is the lead, and what's the actor's name?
Jim Parsons.
Jim Parsons, right.
Yes.
He got the part, but the person who was second in line, second up for the part, was probably a real professional actor, because they don't take in walk-ins off the street in those kind of sitcoms. You have to be referred by an agent. So, I mean, all the people who, if he got ill or something and couldn't do it, the second person in line was probably still very qualified.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm veering off the subject. So I became real good friends with Fred from his attendance at Fanex, and he knew about me. He was familiar with the Doler movies I was in, and he had read my magazine, because in every issue of the magazine, I would plug my newest movie and with a photo and a review. So anyway, he offered me the part, and I said, sure, I'd love to. So in lieu of pay, he gave me a free round trip plane ticket, and I stayed at his home. So that's where I slept, and we would treat each other to meals and so forth. So that was a real cool experience. That was my first trip to California. I prepared a lot by, of course, studying the lines, and I prepared a lot by praying that the plane didn't crash, because there had been a recent crash. I think Southwest Airlines in Pennsylvania, the state right above me. And then I'm going to go on one of their flights, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I hope this one doesn't crash too. So I did a lot of praying. You think I'm joking?
No. I can imagine that would rattle you.
I'm not a big fan of flying.
Okay.
I wouldn't, you know, I would do it for a film, but I don't think I'd want to do it for somebody's wedding.
Okay.
You know, that's not as important as being in a movie. So if you get married, I'm not taking a plane. So that's about all, really. I just studied the script a lot. And
how was the cast and crew on that shoot?
Oh, they were very, very nice. I got to meet Michelle Bauer, whom I had seen in other films, and got to work with John Lazar, who was in Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. And it was a lot of fun. I met Ross Hagen and Tommy Kirk and Russ Tamblyn. A couple of those people I'd met before, but it was nice to see them again. I wasn't in their scenes, but I went out to, I had to go with Fred for the rest of the shoot. After my stuff was wrapped, I had to go with Fred, or I wouldn't have any place to go. So I attended the shoot with Russ Tamblyn and Tommy Kirk and Ross Hagen. I was there the night they shot that scene at the gas station at the... I'll use that movie ranch. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. It was a movie ranch with a great big ranch, and they had all these standing sets.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Mexican village and a gas station scene and all this stuff. So I was there. And I met a lot of nice people. It was a lot of fun. I really had a great time.
Well, one thing I noticed, because it's interesting, because I spoke to several Weeks ago, I spoke to Michael Spedden, who said that one of the best pieces of advice he ever got while acting was don't quit your day job. And I know that you had kind of a government job that.
Yeah. A lot of people are surprised at that because I did publish magazines and did all this acting over the years, but it never really paid the bills. See, my approach is a lot different than some actors. Some actors say, I'm going to go to California and spend 5 years there. And if I don't make it, I'm coming back home. Mm-hmm. You know, but I never had that attitude. I kind of I'm the kind of person who doesn't expect too much. That way I'm not disappointed. So I never expected to make a lot of money off of it in the sense that I was going to live in a big mansion and, you know, have servants and stuff. But I always wanted to do it. So I always did it on the side. But most people don't do it on the side for as many years as I've done it on the side. If you notice, and most people, they drift in and out of it, mostly out of it after they've drifted in it. Mm-hmm. And they're around for a couple years or so. And they do something else. Like, well, with the 60-foot centerfold, J.J. North, I don't think she's acting anymore.
I don't believe so.
But she could if she wanted to, but I guess she had the feeling that if I don't make a fortune or make big bucks, I'll just go into something else. But I always had the attitude, well, you know, I like to do it part-time or on the side. And as a result, I've got to see myself age over the years from age 27 as Female Trouble to my current age now is 39, like Jack Benny. So I get to see myself age on the screen.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing? You get to see yourself,
well,
in your opinion.
It sort of documents my life. And I can, however, when I see myself the way I looked in the 70s or 80s, I think, oh my God, I wish I could look that young again. You know?
Yeah.
Because Father Time takes its toll.
But, Indeed, he does.
You know, it's fun to see it. On the other hand, it is kind of fun in a way to see what I was capable of doing when I was younger, like running for a while, like running through the woods. Now I have to use a walk. No, not quite a walker, but I'd huff and puff after a short stretch.
Well, George, I have a couple more quick questions to wrap things up. I know that you have a couple of movies that have been subject of a little bit of satire, poking fun at with the guys from the Riff Track Studios.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, there was two of them. The Alien Factor was the first one to be subjected to that. Well, I mean, I wasn't offended. It was flattering in a way because that means that the movie hasn't been forgotten.
Okay.
And, you know, they're poking fun at it, but I mean, I'm sure I've poked fun at it too over the years. I mean, hell, you can't take these movies real, real seriously. Mm-hmm. But I can't, it doesn't bother me. Of course, I only watched that one once and, I might not have picked up on all the digs. And then the other folks did Galaxy Invader. Mm-hmm. Cinematic Titanic, was that the first?
Yes.
They were the ones with the Alien Factor. And I would love to have attended a real live show of that. But I don't think they had any in my area. And I wasn't going to fly out to anywhere to see it in person. Mm-hmm. But so I just bought the DVD. The other people, Riff Trax, did Galaxy Invader.
Yes.
And here again, I was flattered that they did it because that means the movie's getting some more viewers. And so I wasn't upset with it. You know, I didn't get any money either way. So,
okay.
it didn't bother me if they want to make fun of it.
Well, I'm going to ask because I have another colleague that shares a hobby that you share, which you collect trains, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I have to admit I've neglected that hobby in recently. I have to get back into it.
Okay. Well, how'd you get started in that hobby?
Well, I think, of course, I had trains when I was a kid.
Okay.
But I just around the Christmas tree every year. Mm-hmm. Somehow I got into trains later on in life. I like the idea. I think I was when I was depressed at work. I got into trains because I was went through a period of work where I hated it. I worked for the government and I hated it. And it was depressing. And I got into trains because that was about the only thing I could control in my life. I could make it go, make them go backwards and forwards, right and left. I had control over that. I couldn't control my fate at work too well or anything else. Mm-hmm. But except those trains, I could tell them what to do.
Makes sense.
That's a pretty unusual way to get into something, but I was probably older than the usual age of people getting into trains.
Do you collect G scale or?
I have some G scale.
Okay.
I have
Z scale. Is that the other one?
Well, I have Z scale and a little bit of HO.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And believe it, I just found out a year or so ago that there's something actually smaller than Z scale. It's called T scale. It's made in Scotland by this company. You can look it up on eBay if anybody is interested. It's like half the size of Z scale. The only thing is I haven't seen a locomotive that they make with the light in it. And the track, because it needs stability, the track itself is half the size of half the width of a Z scale track, but they have this plastic stuff around it to give it stability. So it doesn't look as small as it really is if you get up mm-hmm. close to it. But somebody actually came out with T scale.
Huh.
But I can't get too serious about that because it's so small and it's not as solid as Z or HO or G. When I was a kid, I had O scale going around the Christmas tree. But I only have one car, a coal car, survived from those years. I guess my parents got rid of the rest of it. What's your friend have?
He does G and Z.
G and Z. That's from one extreme to the other.
Yes. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yep. He does both. He has different displays.
Cool.
That he tinkers with. So, yeah. So I'm a little bit familiar with it.
Good. Yeah. It's fun. You know, I have to, Mike's Train House, which is going out of business, I think. And I get, cause Mike is retiring. That's a big manufacturer. Sounds like a store, but it's actually a manufacturer. They're in, Columbia, Maryland. You can ask your friend about them.
Okay.
Mike Greenhouse. The man's retiring and I think he's closing up the business. And although, you know, I wish they wouldn't do that because I think the train hobby is suffering enough. I don't think the kids growing up today are attracted too much to trains unless they can see them on their phone or
their
laptop. But,
well, it's George, it's like lots of things. It's, you know, if you're not building that future audience, no matter if you're talking movies or sports or trains or whatever, you're going to be out of luck.
Yeah, people change their interests.
Well, George, do you have any projects you'd like to talk about that's coming up? Anything on the docket?
Well, I did a few projects last year at my home. I filmed them myself.
Okay.
Inside on a telephone or out in the yard. I did a scene for the Amityville Hex, Bloody Hooker Massacre, Things 7. And coming up, I'm going to be in something called Flesh Eaters, one called Brazen Impact. So those are the two projects for this year that I know about so far.
Cool.
But I did do some things last year remotely. Because
mm-hmm.
Sometimes people ask me to be in their films if they live out of state. Usually I do that with something that's doesn't involve the other cast members, like unless it's a phone conversation, my end of a phone conversation. Or I was in this movie called Movie Club, and I was a dispatcher or policeman or something. I was sitting in my car just doing on my cell phone talking to somebody else. It was like, you know, but I could do it in my driveway. So luckily the footage seems to match up, although I don't have the greatest, I don't have a 4K camera
mm-hmm.
or even a 4K or 8K phone.
Yeah.
Like the Samsung Galaxy. The new one is 8K, but so far nobody's complained about my video skills.
Okay. Well, yeah. Do you have a website, or do you have some social media, Facebook or whatnot?
Just Facebook, I'm afraid. Okay. I don't Twitter, or I don't tweet. I don't Instagram. I'm kind of low tech. Facebook was a challenge enough for me.
Okay. Look for George Stover on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm easy to find.
Okay.
If anybody wants to be my friend.
Okay.
I'm easy to find. And I do give preferential friendships to attractive young ladies. The closer they live to Baltimore, the more preferential treatment I give them.
Well, George, again, thank you so very much for taking some time out of your schedule to sit down and chat with me.
Well, my pleasure.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with George Stover, talking about his career, the craft of acting, and even trains. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. And there's a couple of different ways where you can tell me that you did so. You could shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds. Just search for @pvdcast. And you can even find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @pvdmvp. And maybe you want to let some folks know about this podcast and you feel like you should tell them where to find it. Well, one good place to find it, pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting platforms. And all you have to do is go to their search bar, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. And I want to let you know about a few broadcasts that are happening through Facebook. The first one happens on Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, through the Facebook page of this podcast. Again, just look for @PVDcast. And that broadcast is replayed on Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, thanks to my friends over at The Scene Snobs. And you can find out more information about that great podcast channel, the PVDcast, and all these great, awesome shows that are on the network. Just go to thescenesnobs.com. All right, with that being said, I'm going to get on out of here. Thanks for listening one more time. And with that, I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2021.